You know, this past weekend, I had the pleasure of being in Sedona, Arizona, where I was on stage with Graham Hancock at the Fight for the Past conference, and I had the chance to discuss the debunking industry. And you could call it an industry. I mean, these guys really, this is their job is to poke holes in pseudoscience. And one of the things that we discussed was their underhanded tactics, and Graham mentioned something that kind of broke my heart. He talked about Robert Bovall. If you don't know who he is, he's the man who first discerned the Orion-Giza correlation. And Graham talked about how he was just like done playing in the sandbox with the rest of us because he was so thoroughly and viciously attacked by the debunking community, and the things that they said about him and the way that they addressed his arguments was so underhanded that he don't want to mess with it no more. He's getting long in the tooth. His health isn't what it used to be, and it just gets under his skin, and he doesn't feel like it's very productive anymore, it seems, to go butting his heads with these people who don't engage in good faith, and he's tired of it. And that broke my heart, like I say, but it also, well, it inspired me to make this video, somewhat in the hopes that Graham will show this to Robert, not because I expect that'll bring Robert back in. If he's tired of it, that's fine, and I respect that. I just want Robert to see that, and it's for you all to see as well, that this is not the debunkings that are usually used to bear against the Orion-Giza correlation are, to be very blunt about it, they're BS, okay? This wasn't the first minute of the video, I'd be stronger, but it's BS, okay? They do not debunk this stuff in any sort of honest way at all that I have seen. The mainstream debunkings are full of crap, and I'm going to bring receipts. So strap yourselves in. This one's going to get a little data heavy, but if you're into the Orion-Giza correlation, you might be pretty interested in what I got to say here. Hi, my name is Dan, and welcome to Dedunking. Now let's just start with this image right here. This hit me like a ton of bricks when I first saw it in Fingerprints of the Gods. Now if you're into astronomy and you look at things skeptically, this is one of those big if true things, right? I mean, it's huge in fact. And look at what it shows here. The pyramids lining up with Orion. The Sphinx lining up with the constellation Leo as the sun rises on the spring equinox, and the Nile River meeting the Milky Way on the horizon. It looks like a great big clock frozen on the ground from 10,000 plus years ago screaming, "We were here." And it really made an impact on me and many others. Now this work built off of the previous work of Egyptologist Alexander Badawi and the astrophysicist Virginia Trimble. In 1964, they published papers on these shafts, the often called star shafts of the Great Pyramid, and their alignment with Orion. Now Orion was a big deal to ancient Egyptians, and as a matter of fact, he was crucial in the rebirth of the soul. He was said to represent Osiris as the guardian of the boat, or the pilot of the boat that went through the underworld. Osiris is a big deal, and you would expect to see him represented in the place that was, you know, concerned with resurrection, which the pyramids presumably were, right? According to mainstream historians. So the discovery of anything related to Orion Osiris makes perfect sense. And for those of you who are into archaeoastronomy, this is actually a big deal because you don't get to just like make stuff up. You kind of have to have some sort of touchstone, generally speaking, to run with, or you really have to bring a lot of math to bear. And in this case, we have a touchstone. We can say that the ancient Egyptians had a spiritual belief of those three stars that would coincide with the pyramids were tombs hypothesis. Ergo, this was accepted, generally speaking, by most Egyptologists, or a good chunk of them anyway, back in those days. Robert Bovall built off of this, discovering the clock that I showed you just a little bit ago, the clock, and this was not so generally well accepted, a lot of it because of the 10,500 BC date. Let's just be clear, that's really what it comes down to. And then, you know, guys like Graham Hancock, well, you can find him saying that it's instrumental. This is a crucial part of his position. So it's key, which means it's going to get attacked because this is freaking Graham Hancock, right? I mean, this is clear. So we got some pretty underhanded, some pretty BS things came out right away in the days before the internet, when fact-checking astronomy stuff wasn't so easy. Now, this right here is one of my favorite books, E.C. Krupp, and he's a genius when it comes to archaeoastronomy. There's really no other way of putting it. The man is, he has a really good touch on the ancient mind and how it would interact with the stars, and it's borne out in books like this. If you read it, I highly recommend that book. However, when it came to debunking the Orion-Giza correlation, well, I have a hard time saying that he wasn't being a little bit on the dishonest end of things here. And the reason that I say that is because he is a fucking genius when it comes to this stuff. So when you see how stupid his argument is here, you'll see what my problem is. His first argument is that the entire constellation pyramid correlation, it's upside down. It's 180 degrees off. In his own words, readers of the Orion Mystery are shown an aerial photograph of Giza paired with a picture of Orion's belt. There is something wrong with these images, however. The picture of the pyramids is oriented with north at the bottom of the page. Orion's belt, on the other hand, has north at the top. To make the pyramids match the sky, you have to turn Egypt upside down. In fact, all of the book's maps of Egypt are published upside down, with south at the top. Now, this is published in February of 1997 in Sky and Telescope magazine, for those of you who remember what those old non-volatile storage devices were. And further down in that article, he tries to cut off arguments that might say, hey, it's not such a big deal that it's upside down. He's like, aha, I've got you there. And in order to do that, he invokes those star shafts. Although an Orion mystery enthusiast might argue that the inversion is not really significant, or that the Egyptians deliberately upturned their constellation for arcane reasons known only to them, these rationalizations won't fly. Embracing the plausibly astronomical orientation of the Great Pyramid's north and south shafts, Bovall and Gilbert are obliged to accept the fact that north means north and south means south in the Great Pyramid. It makes no sense, then, to reverse them in the overall plan. Now, this is a red herring, and I honestly don't see how Krupp could have not seen this, okay? The star shafts are aligned to those stars at certain times in order for them to specifically allow a hypothetical path to exist. That's the theory, is to allow a path to exist for the king's soul or whatever to leave the sarcophagus and zoom up off into Orion, right? The Duat. Now, that's the hypothesis of the star shafts. But the layout of the pyramids themselves is one that's meant to mirror the sky on the ground. So it doesn't really matter that north is north and south is south, as he says, because that has nothing to do. One of these is about the starlight getting into there. The other one is about the setup of the pyramids on the ground. These really have fuck all to do with each other. And again, I don't see how he's not aware of that. It should be patently obvious. Now, allow me to illustrate why the upside down issue is stupid, okay? Just stupid. Now, this here is a classic 80s movie. Now, I'm going to put it right here, and then I'm going to copy it onto this piece of paper, right? Like, pretend that I'm looking up at the sky whenever I look forward at this movie, okay? Now, I have two ways that I can lay the paper down after I have made my copy. Now, which one seems most intuitive to you? Should I lay the image face down or face up? Obviously, face up, right? So, now look at what happened. I mean this Greek statue, and our date, well, she, both of us are facing the opposite direction as the original image, right? This is naturally occurring, as you just saw. I just made it for you in real time. You didn't know I could draw, did you? But you see the issue. The inversion of the layout is natural. It just happens. It seems absurd to me that Krupp doesn't realize this. As a matter of fact, I can't believe that he doesn't recognize this. That just seems patently false to me. Listen to what he says near the end of this same article. Mapping the skies onto ancient monuments is nothing new. Paul Kosak, without adequate evidence, once called the giant prehistoric ground drawings on Peru's Nazca Desert the largest astronomy book in the world. In 1929, Catherine K. Maltwood fabricated a huge terrestrial zodiac from landforms in the vicinity of Glastonbury, England. Now, in other words, this kind of stuff happens, but not here. I mean, this it can't happen here. And let's be clear. Well, we're saying that this is a flip-flopped image. It should point this direction, but it points this way. It's a mirror of itself where it should be. That should make somebody stop and think. You know, it's not like 78.4 degrees off. It's like 180 degrees off. And Krupp seems to address this with this kind of subtle seed planting that seems more designed to influence the way people are thinking than it is designed to actually portray accurate information. Instead, however, one might adopt a completely independent perspective and imagine the way Orion would look from a point outside of the celestial sphere. In that case, east is east and west is west, but the twain still don't meet. The belt is just in the wrong direction. Independent perspective, my ass. This isn't some arbitrary point outside the celestial sphere that we're talking about here. It's a mirror image of what he thinks it should be. Although I have to say that with the ease that I just demonstrated how they would have gotten this layout there, I can't help but wonder if Krupp would have just said that it was upside down if it was oriented the other way. And my answer, my inclination is to say yes. Now, excluding the old ancients weren't smart enough to do this argument, this upside-down bullshit is the first objection one will find to Vival's work. But the next one is equally bullshit. Astronomer Anthony Farrell said this in the June 1999 issue of Astronomy and Geophysics, another one of those ancient magazine things. A parallel assertion of Hancock and Vival is to say that 10,500 BC would be during the astrological age of the lion, a connection they seek with the Sphinx. However, the vernal equinox of 10,500 BC would lie at 2,011 hours 40 minutes plus 2.2 degrees, which, although close to the star pattern we now know as Leo, still lies decidedly in Virgo. In other words, Sphinx shouldn't be the lion, if Vival's correct. It should be whatever their interpretation of Virgo was back in those days. And this is something that bears some examining here, because it is true that the sun would have been on the cusp between those two constellations at that time. But to say that it would be firmly in Leo is something that, well, that's not exactly accurate. As a matter of fact, I'm going to offer you three lines of evidence to go there, and the third one's so robust that I almost don't need the first two, but you're going to get all three anyway. The first one is Wikipedia, everybody's favorite source. Astrologers do not agree upon exact dates for the beginning or ending of the ages, with given dates varying by hundreds of years. And if you look here, you can see that the dates do, in fact, bounce around quite a bit. It's not a steady 2,100-ish years per age. It jumps around. And it gives the age of Leo as 10,750 BC. 250 years off of this 10,500 BC. So, right off the bat, that's a little sketch. But the second line of evidence that I'll give you for this is pop culture-y. You know, 1969, way back before I was even born, which is crazy to think about, there was this band called The Fifth Dimension, and they had this song called Let the Sun Shine In, but you probably know it by the same name that I've always known it as. This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius. All right? And but if you look there on Wikipedia, when does it say that the age of Aquarius is? 2150 AD. Almost 200 full years from the time that song was published. This happens, man. People are not sure what astronomical age we're in when we're on the cusp. They get to kind of pick and choose. And one might well be able to argue that if they were building something that was meant to go down through the next 2,000 years, they would pick the age that was starting, not the one that was ending, in the hopes that the lion would continue to be venerated as part of the new age. Not very complicated idea here. But, as I said, I've got a third point, and this one's got teeth. Don't know what to tell you. In a 2011 paper titled Quantitative Astronomical Analysis of the Orion Correlation Theory, astrophysicist Vincenzo Orofino made a case for a fourth dynasty dating of the correlation. In his paper, he not only accepts that the Orion-Giza correlation is accurate, but finding those reasons to tie it to the fourth dynasty instead of 10,500 BC, but he addresses numerous arguments against it, including the upside-down argument. His argument, as a matter of fact, is different than mine. It is interesting to recall that, to overlap the Orion belt stars on the Giza pyramids, it is first of all necessary to rotate 180 degrees a celestial map, so that the northernmost star, Mintaka, corresponds to the southernmost pyramid, Menkaure. As suggested by Vival, 2006, this apparent reversal of the north-south axis does not constitute a problem at all, since it could be simply due to the fact that the ancient Egyptians probably drew their geographic maps with south at the top. And he even finds more correlative data. He found another connection between Orion and the pyramids on the Giza Plateau. There is an inverse magnitude correlation. And that's to say, the magnitude of the stars, the brighter the star that this pyramid is supposed to be connected to, that's supposed to represent, the shorter the pyramid. The brighter the star, the shorter the pyramid. Almost like the Egyptians knew they had it backwards. But this isn't just like some arbitrary, oh, this is so much bigger here and so much smaller, there's some numbers. No, it's measured. I'll read from his work because he's gooder at this stuff than Iyer is. A plot of the visual magnitude M of the Orion belt stars versus the apparent height H of the corresponding pyramids with respect to the base level of the Khufu pyramid shows a significant anticorrelation between the two quantities. See Figure 5. Such an anticorrelation means that equal increases in H correspond to equal decreases in M, and therefore to equal increments in the apparent brightness of the stars. The ancient Egyptian well knew this kind of geometric mathematical relationship that they used for many times when, for example, they planned and carried out architectural structures with constant slope, where equal horizontal displacements correspond to equal vertical displacements, such as the same pyramids and the shafts and corridors inside of them. In other words, what we have here is a pretty mainstream scientist, a guy who doesn't believe in Atlantis or 10,500 BC having anything to do with this stuff, who still found Robert Bovall's data worthy of examination and building on. Now, let me hammer that home for a minute, okay? He has somebody else who he's engaged in a debate with, who believes that Cygnus is also part of the correlation, who also accepts the Orion-Giza correlation as part of the deal as well. In other words, we have academic debate that is happening based on the work of Robert Bovall. So I can really think of no better proof that his work has some value, some merit, because these are people who are not, they're probably kind of putting their neck on the line a little bit, right? I mean, this is attached to Graham Hancock and all that crazy woo shit. So, oh my God, if we can't go down that road, but they still do anyway, because presumably they find the data compelling and they have enough integrity to not give two shits if somebody's going to cry about it. That brings me to the next part of the video that changed the tone just a hair, I guess. You know, I get to talk to most of the people in the alternate history sphere nowadays. I talk to freaking Graham Hancock and Randall Carlson and Christopher Dunn and Jimmy Corsetti and Wandering Wolf and Illegitimate Scholar and Nick Anna Jones, Nerdrotic, all kinds of people I get to chat with nowadays. And one guy that I don't get to talk to that I really would like to is Robert Bovall. So hopefully he gets this message. I'm hoping that Graham will send it to him, since I know they're pretty good friends. Sir, your work was instrumental in getting people like me involved. It was instrumental in getting me involved. Seeing that part in Fingerprints of the Gods was like the smoking gun, like I said earlier. It was basically the evidence, the hard data that provided a backbone to the ideas that Graham had in the first book. It was probably the most robust piece of solid evidence, because it's just so, if you're into that stuff, it's really strong, right? So anyway, I want to let you know right off the bat, clearly nobody needs to tell you this, but I will anyway, you were instrumental in the alternate history sphere, period, end of story. There's a reason Graham calls your work crucial, and it's not an understatement. And that's why you got all these slings and arrows. And I'm not blaming Graham. I'm blaming the assholes that did it. But you know how it is. Better than I do. You hang out with Graham Hancock and you're going to have rocks thrown at your head. But outside of the alternate history sphere, as I've shown in this video, you have influenced real astrophysicists, people who aren't into Atlantis, people who aren't into any of the woo, people who aren't, like myself, that aren't even into ancient high technology. I draw a pretty firm line compared to where a lot of people are in this community, and I'm still very impressed by your work, sir. And the fact that scientists are using it now to potentially discern more about ancient Egypt, well, your work is going to go forward into history being well remembered. Graham alluded to the next generation and talked about people that are carrying the torch for the next, you know, as him and his contemporaries get long in the tooth, jackasses like me and Jimmy Corsetti and Ben Van Kirkwick and et cetera, et cetera. We show up on the scene for better or for worse, right? And, well, you, sir, will be remembered well in our circle for damn sure. I'll make sure of that. And I'm pretty into archaeoastronomy as far as us dorks go. But the mainstream scientific community, your work isn't been completely rejected by them. It's only being rejected by a handful of people who knee-jerked it, and as I showed in this video, they didn't do a very good job. I strongly encourage you to check out Vincenzo Orfino's paper if you haven't seen it before. He addresses a lot of the more subtle arguments against the Orion-Giza correlation. This is both to Robert and everyone else at this point, by the way. It's definitely a paper worth checking out. But back again to Robert, one more thing. I just want to let you know, I really do appreciate your work that you've done. And I just want to let you know you won't be remembered as a charlatan. The people that are trying to hammer away at that now are slowly being exposed for the con artists that they are, or for the liars that they are, or the frauds, or the knee jerk. You can give them whatever degree of leniency and credit for their bullshit you want. I tend to be a little harsher than some on that. I expect more from my scientists, I guess. But anyway, that's the end of my personal message to Mr. Baval. I want to say to all the people that I saw in Sedona, thank you. This was great, man. I had a really good time, especially with Mike and Megan. They made me this awesome shirt. I'll have to break my shit if I stand on everything all crazy. Yeah, that ain't going to work. I'll just post a picture of me here with it in a minute. But this shirt was pretty slick. I'm pretty funny, and I really appreciate you guys for giving it to me. And you guys gave it to a few other people too, but I don't really care. I'm wearing it, and I'm really proud of it. I think it's hilarious. You guys were great people to meet. I met a lot of great people in Sedona over the weekend. But Mike and Megan were just, I don't know, they're just my kind of people, I guess you could say. I met them in a bar, if that's anything, I should tell you right off the bat. They're my kind of people. But anyway, we had a good time. And to everybody else that I met, thank you so much. This was, it was really crazy. I'd never experienced anything like that before. I literally couldn't walk from one end of the building to the other. I apologize for people that I was having a conversation with and I had to walk away from it because I got called somewhere else. I'm really sorry. There was so many of you and only so little of me. And I haven't looked at the emails that you guys have sent me yet, but I will. I promise. I'm just a little buried right now trying to even get a video out for the week, right? But I appreciate it. Thank you all so very much. And there's buttons down below if you want to click those to support the channel. I'm going to be at the Cosmic Summit. If you enjoyed seeing me here, enjoy seeing me at the Cosmic Summit. Or if you miss seeing me here, don't miss me at the Cosmic Summit. It's in late June. There's a link down below. You can go check it out and buy your tickets. And then we can meet and shake hands. And there'll be a few more days there, I believe. So hopefully I'll have a little bit more energy or a little bit more time to see the peoples that we get to talk to. But at any rate, as those of you who saw me go, I'm not just going to be like, fuck you. I'll walk up, shake your hand, ask your name, chat with you a little bit. You want a picture, you want an autograph, you want a high five, you want to tell a joke. We can have a conversation, right? And I'm looking forward to doing it again. Thank you very much and have a good night.